I'm open today.
What a day.
Really is.
Come on.
This is the weirdest home opener that I can remember. I go every year. I love it. I've been since 2013. And by that, I mean I've gone to the mall since 2014. I wasn't there for the R.A. Dickey start.
Mm.
I remember watching that on television going, oh, that seems very not fun. Watching him bounce a million balls in the dirt. And it felt like this horrible omen for the season. And it turned out to be correct. Honestly, in hindsight, it's kind of the best home opener because it's the one that will go down forever as, oh, right, that one. All the expectations in the world and just, wait, again? Wait, so he still can't read that knuckleball, huh? Ouch. Just Buck. He's having a tough time with that. It's a very hard pitch to read. I love opening day because, or home opener. I always call it opening day, but it's like, I love the home opener because it used to be the day where the ballpark was full and you would think, man, have some success and then this thing will be completely loaded. And then when they stopped having success, you know, after 2016 for a little while there, you went, okay, well, this is when there's going to be some buzz in the building and I want to feel that again. Like, I want to feel what it's like to have real expectations in the building. Well, it's an event city and home opener is always an event. But this one in particular, you know, 2017, there was a lull, right? The main cast of characters, Edwin had left, Bautista was returning, but it was on a weird deal where no one wanted him outside of Toronto, and there were real indicators that he was going to slow down. And the team, it was, oh, maybe Kendrys Morales is going to be good, and there was at least a way that you could squint and see that they were kind of half trying. They were sort of 1 foot in, 1 foot out on the rebuild that everybody knew was coming. 2018, you didn't think there was any hope at all, right? Like, it was, all right. We know what this is. This season is the first time where they have real expectations, and yet it's balanced by tons of fan pessimism. And the Jays didn't do themselves any favor over the weekend when they played the Yankees, because once again, they lost more games than they won. And once again, a bunch of the players that we anticipated with the positive regression season didn't really do that. It was frustrating. Again, it was a really frustrating watch. And the Toronto Blue Jays, who spent the entire offseason telling everyone, don't worry, we're doubling down on this team. Actually, sorry, they didn't start by saying, don't worry. They said, we're doubling down on this team. Don't worry. There's going to be some positive regression. Not all of the bats could be as bad as they were last year. We really feel as though a major component of this team was bad luck. And now we've arrived at the home opener. And the Jays come to the Rogers Center, the newly renovated Rogers Center, which I cannot wait to see tonight, truly. And I'm going today and Friday. They're 26th in average, 23rd in OPS, 21st in RBIs. And here are some of the figures for the three biggest positive regression guys that they were counting on. Dalton Varsho, 404 OPS, already bumped down the lineup after starting too high again. Right? Like, this is a guy, they said, hey, we want him hitting fifth. Just like the year before, they wanted him hitting cleanup, and then boom. A couple series into the season, and it's, yeah, I don't know if he's that. He's got one extra base hit and 31 plate appearances. Vlad Jr., 689 OPS. Often looking lost at the plate. I thought Kevin Barker has been incredible talking about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. on Jays Talk. So subscribe to that podcast because, yeah, Blair and Barker have both been great. But, yeah, Barker breaking down his approach. Just like, that's a guy who's been a hitter. And then Alejandro Kirk, who had another feeble pop-up yesterday with the bases loaded, has got a 392 OPS. So, yeah, tons of time for these guys to turn it around. But you're looking at another season, or you're looking at a start of a season where these guys are arriving. It's a lot of the familiar faces. There's not a lot of new injection of hope and optimism and new bats that are going to be up that aren't going to feel familiar to this crowd. One of which is Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, who has been exactly as advertised, which is he can't hit a lick. The other one, Justin Turner, has been good. It's been a nice signing, but I think that, again, you just swap them out for Brandon Belt. It's just another old guy who's like probably shouldn't be as good of a hitter on your team as he is. But yeah, the fans are going to look up at that Jumbotron. They're going to look up at the stats, and that's what you're going to see. And so if the Toronto Blue Jays end up getting off to a horrific start at home, where they face three awesome pitchers in the Seattle Mariners, like three of the best starting pitchers that any team has in all of baseball, three playoff caliber starting pitchers, I think that this is going to be one of the weirdest moods I've ever seen at a home opener. I've seen disappointing ones where, you know, Barrios a couple of years ago, where he gets off to the horrific start, yeah, and people are groaning in the seats and the Jays come back and it feels really exciting. I've seen people be down on the team to start, but I don't know if it's going to have... I'm very, very curious to be down there tonight and feel what it's going to be if the Jays can't hit. If the Jays get completely shut down by Luis Castillo and it's like a 1-0 or a 2-1 game heading into the eighth inning and the Jays are trailing, what the atmosphere is going to be down, be like down there. Because I think that it could be like that for a vast majority of the season. Anyways, I'm trying to remain optimistic, but yeah, because that's what today's supposed to be all about. Anyways, to improve the vibes, as always, my friend and yours, the flawless one when it comes to the vibes, the world's busiest man, Scholby Armstrong, of Game Notes on NHL and Sportsnet. What's up, brother?
What's going on, buddy?
Dude, you're so busy. Like, what are you doing? This is too much. You're doing too much. You got to chill out.
I can't say no.
You are, dude. Get it. Don't you have an agent still? Like, there's no one out here to protect you. Like, you're getting, this is bad. I know you can't say no. You're too nice of a guy. Even when you have to say no to me, it's like, there's like 85 qualifiers being like, I'm so sorry, buddy. And I'm like, dude, it's fine. You can't do it. It's all right. Just let it go. It's going to be okay. Like, you're the hardest working man,
buddy.
You're the hardest working man in hockey.
Disease.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I got it. I think a lot of people work hard. I think a lot of people have very busy jobs.
Yeah.
I have somehow managed, and I can't wait till the season's done to get to the playoffs, but I've somehow managed like to do five different jobs like pretty heavily.
Dude.
I don't know how. I actually kinda hate my life right now a little bit, I'm not gonna lie. It's been insane, but it's been awesome. It's been awesome, buddy.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. You don't sound burnt at all.
I get summers off.
No, that's the best, okay? That's the best, dude. And 100%, you have a great life and, you know, you got a great family, great support system. You're in high demand for a reason because, you know, you're well-liked and you're good at your job. And I got to say, dude, you know, we're using this time now to catch up, right? Like, we're going to talk about Leafs Penguins in a second. It's a huge thing, but I haven't talked to you in a little while. I mean this. Do you remember when you first started getting into TV and we would talk? Remember when like Merrick abandoned the desk and you were like, oh my God, this is a nightmare. I hate being on TV. This is so hard.
Yeah. That was hilarious.
Dude, you're so good at TV now. Like so good at TV.
I can't believe I abandoned the desk on that. I was like, that was you watched a younger person have a heart attack on live TV.
Yeah,
right,
dude,
there
you were in shambles and you were terrified of this job. Like you did not want to talk about the other players. You hated having to be critical of guys. You were stepping on yourself. You were having a tough time, you know, translating the personality to on air because this job is hard. And this is one of the hardest things for players, right? Is we look at you guys and go, oh, well, this guy has personality, so he'll be just immediately a superstar. And they go, here, go on TV right now. Go live. Go. And then you got certain dudes that, you know, work in places and who they're just on you. And you're going, can I just get a shot? Can I get 5 minutes without getting crushed by you? And they're like, nah. I'm going to crush you right out of the gate. I'm trying to, you know, squish your spirit and get you to fit into the box of what I expect you to be. But no, dude, I mean this sincerely as your friend. I watch you all the time and I am always just like blown away at how great you've become at this job.
Thanks, buddy. That was amazing. Yeah, it's been crazy. It's been a crazy number of years. And I will say, like, I'm thankful that I got, like, you got to get thrown in those positions, right? You got to get thrown into that stuff. And like just getting thrown into live TV and not understanding a lick about it. And then like having the patience enough with yourself to not hate yourself and go, oh my God, it was so bad. And kind of stay with it and improve and get better. And man, I've had lots of people in my corner that have, you know, given me advice and helped me, and people that I've worked with and when like Jeff Merrick, who I was primarily with early in my career, that was like amazing to me. And then getting to work, you know how good, well, you're a host, you know how hard, I don't know if you know how hard it is to run a show. I couldn't do what you do. I can't do what like Merrick or Amber or what Ron McLean does. There's no chance. Like I'm just a hockey guy, but I have worked at it. I have, you know, gotten to a point where I feel comfortable on camera and being myself. And that's just because I got to do lots of different things from radio, co-hosting things, podcasts, features, sit down interviews with people all over the place, commercials, which are blowing people's minds every single day on overload. Every day I'm there doing commercials. So I've gotten to do a lot of different styles of it and in lots of different ways and just become comfortable with myself doing all those things. It's been unreal. It's been an awesome time. I'm still around the greatest game in the world,
Of course.
I'm around, like, of all the jobs you have in this great game that it blesses our world with, I am still in the best league in the world, covering it in multiple different areas, which is just unreal. I thought I'd be pumping gas back in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan.
Me too.
Instead, I flew in with the Penguins on their plane. Yeah, thanks, buddy. Yeah. I flew in with the Penguins on their plane, had a great dinner last night, and I'm ready to call a huge game tonight in Toronto.
Dude, it is a huge game. This is a weirdly... So, I do Leafs Talk, right? I do every single post-game show, and... A lot of this regular season, it's been, all right, yeah, no, this is good. And it's actually been every Leaf season is the same, where people go, what do you got to talk about? What are you going to talk about? Because it's all about the playoffs. It's all about the playoffs. And then the regular season plays out, and I'm like, oh, actually, this was a really interesting regular season, and I enjoyed it immensely. But I do feel as though the stakes are higher tonight than they have been even for some of these Bruins games. I know that sounds stupid, but the Pens... The weirdest thing happened. They were completely written off. Everybody here, including me, was dancing on Dubas's grave. You know, I sent you some like enjoy Dubas text. You know, I've been salty in the text to you. I've been like, wow, the precious genius with his team. Oh, he got Bunting back again. And then all of a sudden, bang, Bunting scores a game winning goal against Tampa Bay the other night when I think that they're going to melt down. Penn's 6-0-1 stretch. Sid and Malkin have 12 of the team's 30 goals. Sid, 7 goals, 16 points in, 18 points in his last 16 games. Caps and Flyers, meanwhile, who are sitting ahead of them, they've lost a combined 13 in a row. Everything is broken for the Penguins, but the Penguins have also taken advantage of it. What's changed? Like, what happened here?
Man, I will say, I was like, there's no way you can overcome being out by 9 points with 5 teams in front of you with the way that they looked this season. I was like, they were rightfully left for dead. Like there was not, it was like Sidney Crosby was doing everything he could to make his team try to believe. And it something clicked a few games ago. They got on a run, and the one guy I give a credit to, and I relate it probably to like Binnington, the Binnington thing is Nedeljkovic. And although he's been here all year, just the situation with his play. Jari got sick, had to be out of the lineup. He had to play back-to-back, and he just caught fire. And in games where it didn't look like – it looked like they were still like the old Penguins from 2 weeks ago, the Penguins that we'd seen all year, he gave them a chance to stay in a game and find a way to get a point or find a way to win. It was insane, the performances that he's been putting together on this little run he's on, starting every single game. And – I think his like battle level, his will and determination has kind of given them like a little bit of a pop. And now they're a team that I watch them. They have jump. They're physical. They lost to Columbus a few games ago before they started this thing. They had 7 hits. 7. Mm. 7 hits. The whole team, all game. It's just like, what are we doing here? And now through this stretch, they've just been blocking shots on the forecheck, creating, like, they all of a sudden became this, like, snarly, desperate team. And I think a lot of it has to do with what Nedeljkovic has kind of infused into this team with belief and doing the hard things. Mm. And, you know, they bought in. They're scoring. Before, you couldn't get a guy to go to the net if you paid him $5 million a year. It just wasn't happening. And now they're throwing pucks to the net. They're getting all these greasy goals. And Bunting's a perfect example with his game winner the other night. He's a guy that's willing to go there. Mm-hmm. He's been really good since coming over. I think he has 13, 14 points in 16 games here as a Penguin, playing really well, but just a different dynamic. We haven't had a guy like that since Hornquist with the Penguins that has kind of the jam to get to those areas. And so it's changed. It's, they're a different team. They're feeling confident. They're feeling good. And there's, like, I think a good enough feeling with the way they're playing, like that kind of style, that has given them an eye-opening feeling of, okay, this works. This is what we have to be. And I can't believe it. They were in the playoffs the other day. They overcame this, like, insurmountable mountain of passing five different teams to try to get into the playoffs. They were there the other day, and now they have an awesome opportunity down the stretch here with last handful of games to you know, be a team that I think they could be dangerous. If they have this, they could be dangerous.
Yeah, of course they could be dangerous. I watched that Tampa game, and I know they had the meltdown later, but in the first period, Tampa didn't touch the puck. And this was right after we had just seen Tampa here in Toronto, and the consensus take was, oh, that's the team you don't want to see in the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
Versteeg was just down there. He was on my show last week. He went to a game live, and he's like, no, they're dialed in. They're rested. They're healthy. They got a chip on their shoulder. And they're just an absolute wagon. They came and faced Toronto. It was the same thing. It's just, oh, crap. They look like the old Tampa Bay team. And Pittsburgh rolled them. Like, they came out in that hockey game and they just went, nah, yeah, you think you're on a heater? No. That's our thing. We're doing that. I feel like they have the benefit of the saves that you're talking about. The benefit of you've got an old core four that's all dominating right now. They're all coming up. Like, I know Carlson's the lesser of them, but he's still, I think, on a 3-game point streak. Letang's doing well.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, you know, Malkin has been phenomenal when people were basically writing off his career and going, yeah, it's over. Sid, clearly, you know, just incredible that he's still able to do this and winning. So I feel like they're just playing, like you're talking about, like that desperate style, the do it for the core four, the old four style. But yeah, you're right. That's the nightmare if you're a Toronto fan. And that's why tonight I really want the Leafs to win. Like, I want them to try to zip up the body bag on this season. Like, the Leafs beat them last time, 7-0. Actually, let me ask you this. Sid grew up a Habs fan. And he's just good. He's just good, right? Like, he dominates every, like, I bet you every team feels like, oh, Sidney Crosby kills us every time he plays them, right? So there's definitely an element of that. But you think Sid likes playing the Leafs a little bit more? You know, like, there's a little added juice? Because he does kill them.
Yeah, I think most guys do, to be honest. We talked about this on Monday Night Hockey last week and what guys feel getting up to play the Leafs. And there's kind of like a us versus like the hockey world vibe, kind of with the media attention and the coverage and the Leafs this, the Leafs did that, the Leafs are awesome. And you kind of come in and have an opportunity to really sting them and be the bad guy. Mm-hmm. And I think so for people coming into town, you have that vibe. Then you have guys that are like from here, like Bunting. Mm-hmm. And you have guys that come in and families here and they want to beat the Leafs and they want to show up in front of their friends and family. So you have all these different aspects that like provide players for having great nights. Last time they were here, you mentioned 7-0 beatdown. Mm-hmm. I did that game. I was here doing that game also. Horrible, like absolute melting of the Penguins. So there's a little bit of that on it. Mind you, that was just before Christmas. It was a long time ago. And a good opportunity for the Penguins for revenge with the way they're feeling and playing. Everything you hit on, from the veteran guys to even some young guys, Jack St. Ivany. Have you heard of him?
No.
Have you ever heard of him?
No.
He's a defenseman that they called up at the start of this stretch, at the start of this, you know, compiling of points in this run that they've been on. He's on the third D pairing. He's a young kid. He just got called up. He's rock solid. He's super smart. Like, I'm like, who is this guy? He's like playing perfect. And as like infused, I think, a youthful energy into the team as well. Mm-hmm. And so they have a little bit of that playing into them with the veteran guys and have found another level. There's no other way to say it. They've just found another level, another gear. They look totally different. It's just crazy to say that this is a totally different team and, you know, right at the right time of the year and doing something that may have looked impossible. And then they have a chance to come in Toronto and play against it. They played some pretty good teams on this stretch too, JD. They played Dallas, they played Colorado, you know, and they played a couple other teams that are pretty good through this stretch and got points or won. So they're feeling pretty good about themselves and playing a pretty good game. And, you know, it's been at the right time because, as you mentioned, some of these other teams are kind of still in that floundering, like no one wants it. Who wants the last wild card spot? And just maybe the Penguins might be able to push themselves not only in the wild card, but third in the Metro.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing is I just can't get over how much of an egg laying there's been from the other teams that are in the mix where they're like, we don't want to be there. Like, I have a conspiracy that Ovi is done and he wants the goal scoring. So, like, he wants the goal record so bad that he's like, don't put me in the playoffs, guys. I need to be rested. I can't play playoff games on these old bones. I need to rest for the off season so I can continue what matters, and that's getting the goals record.
And he's lighting it up, right? He's lighting it up lately. Like
every night. I hate it. It's my nightmare. I root so hard against them. Like, it's just I would say the maddest I've been all season at the Leafs is the goals that they've let in against Ovi. I'm like, why are you allowing this? I don't want them to break the record. I've been very public about this. Like, I hate it. It's a nightmare. When he had whatever 5 goals in 40 games, I went, this is my dream, you know, like retire without it. And now he's gonna get it for sure. He's definitely gonna
taste it.
Oh, it's right there. He completely evaporated the slow start with just the amount of goals that he scored. But yeah, okay, so this is the thing I'm curious about tonight for the Leafs. All right, this is, and you tell me if I'm overreacting to this. Okay, I don't know if the players necessarily care about, like, playing Dubas's team, right? Like, I don't think they do. I think that they're probably kind of boys with them, right? Yeah, exactly. But I do think if you're Sheldon Keefe, what you're telling these guys is, man, Penguins are desperate. They're going to be the most desperate team that Toronto plays left, right? They got a couple of games against some nobodies, non-factors, and then they close out the season with a back-to-back against Tampa and Florida, which, you know, maybe they're playing Florida for home ice, which could be interesting, but yep. I feel like this is the last game where Toronto is going to get playoff intensity guaranteed. And I think that it's going to matter how Toronto matches this Pittsburgh team, because Pittsburgh is going to come out with their hair on fire, I would imagine. They got the playing Toronto factor. It's Bunting's revenge. It's Sidney Crosby. Like, all these guys going. Is this an important one for you to kind of see how Toronto's primed for the postseason? Because they've been red hot too for like the last couple of months, but this game is going to be a little bit more, playoff style.
Yeah, I like to think, like, we saw them, when was it? I worked a game too. My brain is mush, but they played Florida, and
don't overwork it. Just relax, buddy. You don't need to.
I was expecting we had them on a Monday night, Florida, Toronto. Yeah, was that a week ago?
Yeah.
I was expecting like a playoff style game, and
no, Florida, you know, was like, Leafs, no.
They're like, no, we're not doing that tonight. No. Like, you could have this one. Yeah. I know. I was like, what's going on? I thought this would be like, you know, one of those kind of like, oh yeah, we might play you, like, here, like, take this kind of games for them. And it wasn't. And I think tonight it has potential to do that, just because where the Penguins are at right now, and who knows, you know, even through the stretch, buddy, I was like, I've done every Penguins game this year, mm-hmm. and watched them, and I'm like, okay, great win last night. Okay, here's another game. What are they going to do? I have no clue going into the game. That's the way they've been this year. Like, are they going to be good? Or like, who are they? It took like, you know, through this run of games that they've been on, it took like to like game 6 for me to go, okay, well, maybe something's cooking here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe something is enough to come into this game tonight, and the desperation level's there, the quality of play is there, the idea of like what works has been there. And maybe it's one of those games where it is what you would expect it to be, coming up here against Toronto, who's otherwise, you know, been locked into a spot. I forget who said they, you know, these guys have been, you know, in a good position. They're not moving anywhere. I think it was Torts, right? Torts mm-hmm. said that mm-hmm. they come out, they play good hockey, and they're playing like playoff compete hockey that is tough to do in a position that they're in. And so I think the Leafs are used to being where they're at and, you know, working within themselves. And I think it's going to be a really good game tonight. I just do, just because of the stakes, where the Pens are at with their game, and where the Leafs have been in their positioning, that it's just like, hey, we're used to playing like this. We just got to be ready to play.
I'm actually glad that I'm at the Jays game tonight, just because I'll be in hell if Michael Bunting scores like 2 goals and he's doing the, and all the guys are coming and hugging him. And then they're shooting shots up with Dubas in the media box, and he's fist pumping and he's high-fiving Spezza, and the two traitors are just high-fiving. I'd be in shambles. I can't have it. Like, you're talking about this? And I was like, gross. Nobody watched this game. Nobody watched this game. I don't care.
About tonight, then, yeah.
No.
The thing about tonight,
I hate
epic
it.
Leaf Nation meltdown.
Oh, yeah. I hate it. No.
Picture gets painted.
No. I don't want it.
I love it. It'll be great. It.
I know you do. Because, like, deep down, every single time I bring on a Saskatchewan guy, I'm like, you hate the Leafs deeply, right? And they're like, yeah, obviously. Every single time. Oh, yeah. Like, it's actually even hard for me to believe. Oh, whatever. It's fine. You can lie through your teeth like it matters. Like, anyone believes you, buddy. You're a big fan. You love them. You're so proud that you wore the blue and white, you know? Like, you're just like, oh, I did it. I did it. My favorite team. No, we know who you are. We know what you're about. We know what you're about. You can't fool me. Well,
you go enjoy your Blue Jays
yeah,
game.
See? That's what I'm saying. Yeah, exactly. Blue. That's right. I will enjoy blue. It. This is the weirdest thing about me being at that Jays game. I'm going to be on my phone, like, the whole time. People will be like, what are you doing? I'll be like, yeah. I was watching the Leafs.
Buddy, you should sit. You should sit because they did all those renovations, right?
Yeah.
You should sit.
Yeah.
It'd be cool to be in the game, no question. You should sit in that hotel bar where you can watch a game from there and get propped up and get food. And then you could have the TVs on in there and watch both games at the same time.
But
it's unbelievable.
Brother, I got Rogers Ignite, which you can watch three games at one time on your phone, which is actually a feature I've done, which is a psycho move. But it's like I'll have my phone out and you can kind of tap.
I would do.
You can tap between the three games. It's so nice. And that's, you know, it's the best. I love being able to do that. But there's the college championship game tonight. There's Leafs Pens. And then I'm at the Rogers Center for the Jays game. The one good thing is that the pitch clock is real. And I actually kind of hated the pitch clock when I first started going to games because it made it too fast. And I was like, they stopped serving beers in the seventh inning. And I would all of a sudden be like, wait, I've had two beers. That's not enough beers for a baseball game. That's not right. Slow the game down. You know, take the pitch clock away for the seventh inning. And tonight I'm going to go, no, it's good. I need to, basically, this is going to be precision. Get in, get out, head to the bar immediately after, finish the Leafs game, finish the college championship game, watch some of it on my phone, be present, enjoy the Blue Jays, and then hopefully they actually mix in some hits. Okay, last thing for me, because, yeah, again, this is a nightmare game. You like how Keefe has split up all the talent?
I do.
Yeah.
Don't you think Domi's so good up there on that top line?
He is. By the way, I want to see Domi fight Bunting tonight. That's my dream.
Oh.
they're the same weight class. They're the same weight class.
Yeah.
Like, let them fight.
Guys with big hearts going at it.
But neither guy is a good fighter. Like, you know, Domi tries at least. Good for him. He'll mix it up, but I want to see that tonight. That's my dream. That's my number one. Like, if we could get that main event, that would be great for me. I would really enjoy it. Bunting never fights, though.
Yeah. Both feisty guys. I don't know if they're into doing that. You're right. Domi, maybe a little more so. Domi and Bertuzzi up with Matthews has been awesome to watch. They've been awesome to watch. Hounds on pucks, just rifling pucks to Matthews left and right, looking for him nonstop, but doing the stuff to get pucks to be playmakers or be a dangerous line. It's been crazy to watch. And what was going to happen with Marner and coming back, and were they going to split all this stuff up? Were they going to put them? So they've spread it out really nice. And I think they've found a recipe too, with a little bit of spice to their game, right? Mm-hmm. Which is at a good, kind of a good spot for them. And that's been different in the past with guys that have been here majority of the year that have been difference makers in that regard, building towards that. So you might have just painted a great picture, buddy. You might have painted a Picasso on what to expect tonight in this game with everything that's riding on it, and the Penguins' desperation and Leafs' measuring stick kind of game right now for a team that's playing well.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome. You'll be watching it on a 4x2-inch screen.
Correct.
Oh, way to go.
You know what else I'll be doing? I'll be firing you texts if the Leafs go up in this game big time. Like, it's
put your
phone on silent on the desk tonight so that you don't cause a disturbance. Is it ping, ping, ping? That'll be me. Just hammering you with the Dubas memes, because if the Leafs win this game, like, I'm gonna be a happy man. Like, people, I'm gonna be the only guy that Jays are gonna lose like 4-0, get no hit. And I'm going to be walking around smiling. People will be like, is he not a Jays fan? And he'll be like, no, he just watched the Leafs thump Dubas, and he's thrilled about it. He's walking around just thrilled about it. Hey, buddy.
I'm going to make a reference about you on Pittsburgh TV as I'm calling the game for them tonight. Everyone's like, who's this J.D. Bunkus guy that Armstrong keeps destroying?
Yeah, exactly. So we'll another one. Yeah, that's going to be you. Oh, another one. Ouch, Bunkus. Ouchie. Bunting two right in Bunkus's eye. They're going to be like, what the hell is this? This is the weirdest thing. The only guy in Pittsburgh who will get it is my buddy Damashek. He's going to be like, I get it. I like it. I like this. Anyways, hey, brother, go mix in an app, and yeah, I'll be talking to you later tonight.
All right, have a great day of sports, buddy.
You we'll too, see pal. You.
Watch out for that eclipse, hey?
Yeah,
watch out
for that eclipse. I'm going to look at it. I'm going to look right at it. No glasses. I'm not afraid.
Take a chance.
Yeah, I'm going to do it. You only live once. I'm looking right at it. See you, buddy.
See you, bud.
See you. Colby Armstrong. NHL on Sportsnet, Game Notes podcast, yeah, Pittsburgh Penguins, all of it. Okay, so I'm just going to declare this. This is the game of the season. This is the game of the regular season for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I'm missing it tonight, but still, subscribe, review, do all those things to this podcast, but also to Leafs Talk. Sammy's got it tonight. But I'm telling you that I feel the most stakes with this. I can't believe the Penguins are back. I kind of blinked, and all of a sudden they were back in it. I went, ha, 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 look at the Penguins. And I enjoyed dancing on Dubas's grave all year long. And these other teams opened the door, but it doesn't matter. They took advantage of it. They had to be essentially perfect, and they have been perfect. And now tonight, they're going to be playing the Leafs, and they're going to bring it. I don't think that Pittsburgh's going to no-show for this hockey game. They get it. They understand where they are in the standings, and they've got, again, their best four guys outside of their goaltender have been their four aged stars who are, it's not last dance-ish, but they're getting to the end here, and people were saying Malkin's done, people were saying Letang's done, it was like the horrible trade for Carlson, all of this was a nightmare of an idea to bring these guys back together, and all of a sudden they have a chance to actually enter the postseason red hot and go on a roll where they do have goaltending, where they do have Sidney Crosby, where they do have these guys playing this way, where they are healthy-ish. Nightmare here for the Toronto Maple Leafs fans. It's a nightmare. You absolutely don't want this. If the Leafs have the pulse of this city, and hey, listen, don't even worry about the fans, actually. Don't even worry about the fans. Don't worry about us. We'll be fine. Just don't worry about it. Don't even put that in your heads. Do it for yourselves. Go out there and squish this Penguins team like a bug. Go out there and just hammer their playoff chances. Because do you really want that media cycle for 48 hours? Dubas' team came back in here and beat you, and the old guys beat you, and you don't look ready for playoff-style matchups? You don't want that. What you want is a nice, healthy, I won't even be greedy, 4-0 win.
There you are, yeah.
Yeah, that's. I won't
keep
even
it
be
reasonable.
Greedy. Just a nice, clean 4-0 wire-to-wire domination for the Toronto Maple Leafs. That's all I want, where they allow no goals and score four. And they score four spread out between the three lines, and Nylander looks engaged, and Marner's still dropping dimes to Tavares and McMahon, and, yeah, Matthews scores two. That's all I want. That's it. That's all I'm even asking for, is not even that much. Matthews scored two a million times.
Yeah.
How many assists does Marner have in his career? All I want is one.
Yeah. You're really
That's
not asking
so much
too
to
much.
Ask?
No, you're really not asking too much.
Samsonov, you're going to spoil a shutout against the Buffalo Sabres? You can't do it now? Do it now. Do it against this team. Do it this way.
Just do it.
Anyway, I care. People always go, why are you obsessed with Dubas? Because Dubas left the team. People just, they have this like a weird revisionist history. Yes, was he fired? Of course he was. After he wanted the job back? For sure. But he was the guy that stood at that podium. The job was right there for him. And instead he tried to leverage his position. He tried to leverage one playoff win over the course of his entire tenure. And it backfired. And Shanahan saw it and he's like, nah, can't have this. Can't have this again. And then he, after proclaiming he was never going to take another job, immediately went down the street to the place that had been rumored to be hiring him for over a year. And it was, what a shock, what a sudden development, shocking development. He went there, and I don't want to root for that. I don't want to see that have success. And yes, I'll spin it, just like my boy Sammy, who's again on Leafs Talk tonight, Will. which is if they have success, it's I'm so happy for Sid. It's all Sid. Sid deserves all the credit. Nobody else deserves any credit other than Sidney Crosby, which is true, which is true, by the way. But, man, oh, I cannot have tonight where I cannot have going back to my place, trying to get into bed, and the Jays get four hits, Leafs lose to Dubas, and Connecticut wins the championship game. That will be...
There is a nightmare scenario, is
what
you're saying.
This could be one of the worst sporting nights of my life. This really could. This could be as bad as it gets. I could be fully depressed tomorrow doing the show. I might not do the show tomorrow, honestly. Yeah. Like, I might not do it.
Canned programming.
I have guests booked. Don't have it booked. Don't care. Not going to be here.
It's just me on for the show tomorrow.
Hey, guess what? Get ready. It's the Dogless show. So, yeah, big stakes tonight. Show up, Leafs. Care night. Care night in sports, just across the board. What an awesome night. No, truly, I really am grateful for nights like this. Like, who cares about the eclipse? I care about this. I really do. I care infinitely more about these three sporting events than eclipse. And, yeah, I can only look at the sun for long enough to make sure my eyes are still saved for tonight. Actually, maybe I won't even look at it because I need to make sure that my eyes are in perfect condition to watch all the sports tonight. I can't risk it. No, I can't. I don't think I will. I don't think I'll even go outside during the eclipse. I might nap through the eclipse.
Just 3-hour
sure.
nap.
Yeah. I might nap. All right. Let's take a quick break. Has there been a more impactful female athlete than Caitlin Clark? That's next.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
So, yeah, it's probably the most important night in Toronto sports this year. Blue Jays set the tone night. I swear, home opener matters the most to me. Until we get to September, mm-hmm. late August, basically. Mm-hmm. Late August, this is super important. Set the tone. I'm telling you, don't let the fans leave groaning. Get to Luis Castillo. Find a way. Oh, God, if they could just score two to three runs in the first inning of this game.
Yeah, get some early runs.
That's what I'm saying.
Right?
They could just finally prove. It's hilarious. They did this whole Don Mattingly as the offensive coordinator, and they got this new approach to starting, and it's like they never get any hits on starters. they never get any hits off starting pitching. We got this whole new thing going on, and it's like, when will that materialize?
Yeah, just be patient.
Yeah.
Tonight is when it materializes. Yeah.
They got a new approach, and that approach is to start the season even worse than they finished last. Good.
Yeah, we're trying. We're thinking outside the box.
And then, yeah, the Leafs, an opportunity to... They don't get to bury Dubas tonight, Dubas and the Penguins, but, you know, they would
close.
Definitely... Yeah. They'd be like in Casino. It Ooh. Opens up and it goes, like, it's the Pesci monologue, and he's like, you got to dig the graves before you bring him out to the desert. Otherwise, you know, who knows who could come along?
Mm-hmm.
You got to dig the graves early. It's like, that's what they're doing right now. So you could basically send the team out and go dig the grave in the desert. No, they're not dead yet, but at least you've got the grave ready. At least you got the hole ready in the desert so that it can get done real quick if it needs to. So yeah, huge night. And then of course the NCAA Men's Championship. Women's Championship was yesterday. I went out Friday for the Final Four game between Connecticut and Iowa. And it was, first of all, I've never had a sporting experience like that before where, you know, I was very much like one of maybe eight guys in the entire bar. It was packed.
Yeah.
It was awesome. It was really cool. I really, really enjoyed it. What was strange is I was one of the only people cheering for Iowa.
I saw that video.
Yeah, you did, eh? Yeah. I posted. Actually, it's one of my favorite videos that anyone's ever taken.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah. Because I'm cheering as the game ends on a legal screen, which, by the way, was totally the right call. I don't know
so
why there's even...
I'm of two sides. Yes, it was the right call, but also I just don't like...
Yeah, yeah.
You don't like a game ending
like guess
that.
Guess what? Nobody likes a game ending that.
That's
it's anticlimactic. But
plus, as a Kingston, Ontario kid, come on, that going on, Aaliyah?
No, that is an obvious 10 times out of 10 times foul. She lunged out. Like, when they show the one angle where you can't see her body move, it's like, oh my God, it's a horrible call. And then you see it from the ref's vantage point, and it's like, here's your other team's center, like throwing her body out by 2 feet to the right to make sure that there's impact, which creates the opening. It's, if they didn't call it, it would have been the worst non-call since MJ pushed off and was allowed to beat the Jazz. Like, you got to call that. You got to call it. It's so dumb when people are like, well, it's the different point. It's no. My initial reaction was that too. But like right after I obviously celebrated Iowa winning, as you can see in that video. But yeah, I was the only person in the bar that like really liked it. And it's, this is all I could think of when, and congrats to South Carolina. They perfect season, very cool story. The second that the game started, even though Iowa was cruising and Caitlin Clark was draining shots, I went, they're in real trouble here. That team is so good. They're 1-5. They had, what was the center's name? You know this.
For South Carolina?
Yeah.
Cardoso?
Yeah, the Cardoso.
You know, like Cardoso?
Where it felt so unfair, where it was like getting her the rock down low, and I went, well, come on. She's, this is like Zach Edey versus NC State, where DJ Burns trying to cover him, and you go, no, he's more than a foot taller. It's just not going to happen. They were deep. They knocked down shots. Their bench outscored them. It was just it was basically Caitlin Clark, and I don't want to say a bad team because Iowa was good, but yeah, it was Stalky, who was really good for Iowa. Actually kind of won them the Final Four game against Connecticut.
Yeah, her and, I know you have this down too, but her and Kate Martin in that Final Four game were unreal.
No, Kate Martin hit two big turnaround shots and was also pretty quality in the finals game, but they just didn't have the horses for this.
Correct.
Like they weren't deep enough. They didn't have the size. They didn't have the athleticism. They were purely relying on maintaining pace through the three-point shot and having Caitlin Clark be bombs away. And yeah, you could feel the effects of the game on Caitlin Clark as it wore on, which was just like the legs started to go and the shots were getting more and more desperate. And I know that she's used to taking shots from everywhere, and that's part of the reason why we love her so much. But ultimately, you know, she gassed out, the team was done, and it was a pretty wide talent discrepancy. But to me, Caitlin Clark, not of course, goes down as the greatest women's college player ever. And if you can't figure out like how different the talent gap was in her team from South Carolina, I don't really know what to tell you. But I thought there was a couple of things that were really interesting here. One is, this is by far the most I've ever seen men invested in women's sports that was not Olympics. Like, by far. Where every single one of my group chats, I didn't know a single guy outside of Bobby Ryan that was like not excited by this tournament. Like genuinely excited. All of my texts were about this. I was looking forward to yesterday's game far more than I was looking forward to the Blue Jays game.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't even close. The second that game started, I flipped it on in my primary and the Jays were on my secondary screen and I was watching it. And I was like deeply invested in Caitlin Clark. And there's like a magnetism to her. There's a way that she scores. There's a way that she plays, the playmaking, the shooting, all of it that is incredibly enticing. The story. And I thought, how many professional women's athletes have had this great of an impact in such a short time? Because if you think about it, it's really been a year. It's been since that LSU game where people are invested in Caitlin Clark and couldn't wait for the tournament. And it felt hyperbolic at the time when people were talking about this in regards of, like, I saw a lot of podcast hosts doing the take of, I care more about the women's tournament than the men's. I care more about the women's tournament than the men's. And I went, okay, come on. There's no reason to say it like this. But as the tournament war went on, I was like, I'm there, genuinely.
Yeah.
Like, I think that a lot of people were because it was far more compelling. Even the Final Four was like, we ended up getting Purdue and UConn against two teams that were both double-digit underdogs, and it played out exactly the way that we thought it was going to. There was like a brief moment where Alabama was sort of threatening Connecticut, but it was never really a thing. It wasn't going to be a thing. These were extremely competitive games where we were familiar with the cast of characters and where we had a real, genuine rooting interest. And I thought, yeah, if it was me in a non-Olympics, because if you put somebody in, like wrap somebody in the flag, everybody cares, right? I've cared deeply about moguls. You genuinely have to pay me a ridiculous amount of money to watch professional moguls, like for an entire night of my life. Like if you were like, it's the world championships, I'd be like, no.
I'm busy.
0% chance I would be watching that. And then they're like, it's Canada versus USA in the gold medal finals. And I'd be like, this is the most important thing in my entire life. I'm going to do everything possible in my power to ensure that we do this successfully. I'll be talking to every person in my life like, yeah, did you see him moguling? How he moguled? Incredible. That was incredible moguling.
Some of the best moguling I've ever seen.
I have never seen such good moguling. I would care. I'd cry, crying watching the moguling.
Getting up singing the anthem.
Yeah. Just, So I think that from a just casual interest, creating more fan interest than I've ever seen in women's sports, Caitlin Clark is number one, like in such a short period of time. Serena, to me, is actually the most, like, if you were doing the everybody test, everybody's watching this all the time. Everybody wanted to watch Serena, basically her entire career. Like, that's just the thing. Like, Serena, to me, was just everybody wanted to watch. I think Mia Hamm did it for soccer more than anybody else. But again, you're kind of looking at it as like the U.S. women's soccer team more so than I think anybody else in terms of creating a lot of and generating a lot of interest and frankly, like really changed the face of women's sports from an equity standpoint or, you know, was one of the most powerful and driving forces. But I think for women's basketball, there's never been a figure that was as popular as Caitlin Clark. There's never been a figure that has done as much as in a short period of time. And you know, I was texting a lot of people about this, and there is definitely a product of the times thing. Like, you do need to give credit to all the people that came before Caitlin Clark, all the women that came before her that established this. This is a changing sign of the times. Like, now we do have March Madness branding, and I know that really tripped up Kamala Harris. I don't know if you guys saw that clip. She's like, the women weren't even allowed to have a bracket. I was like, not quite that, but close. You were kind of listening to the PR team when they tried to drill this down with you. It's fine. You're only a lawyer. The details don't matter. That's fine. But clearly, there's way more visibility for women's sports than there's ever been. There's been way more fan support that's been showing up for the last few years. And this has all been built on the backs of people who did it in the shadows. Even like everyone was getting mad. And I'm sorry, I didn't have this written down, but the women's player that held the scoring record before Caitlin Clark, she called herself a hidden figure. And I went, you know, I know everyone's getting really mad at her because she's discrediting Caitlin Clark, but I also kind of understand that you would go, whatever, 50 years and not a soul has ever mentioned you or cared about your record whatsoever. And when she said that, I went, you know what? I'd be a little bitter too. I'd be a little annoyed by that as well. But what I have found strange is that it does seem like the women's basketball community has been a little bit more reluctant to heap praise on Caitlin Clark. Like, they almost don't want to give her this credit when in reality it's like nobody's doing the 14 million number without Caitlin Clark. Like, if that was South Carolina and Connecticut, it's not jumping over the Final Four. It's not jumping over the LSU game. Caitlin Clark brought in a crap ton of eyeballs. And I thought it was very strange that like Taurasi was on a broadcast, like kind of talking down on Caitlin Clark and being like, yo, you did this against 18-year-olds, but let's wait till you get to the pros. And I understand a little bit of that analysis because that's the way that we talk about all sports. Mm-hmm. But I just felt as though there was like a real pushback to the level of impact that she's had on this, whether it was that former leading scorer, whether it was Taurasi, it didn't matter. There was a layer from within women's basketball that was, well, she's not so hot. Don't get too excited for her. I wouldn't take her first overall in the WNBA draft. It's like, yes, you should. Even if you don't think she's the best player, from a business standpoint, she is going to sell more tickets than any player in WNBA history without a shadow of a doubt, without even like not even close. Not even close is the interest from Caitlin Clark to the next, like, WNBA player. Not even close. They were showing, who's the player, Simon, because you follow WNBA. Who's the, Aaliyah Moore is her name? No, that's wrong. The first overall pick or the top prospect for the team.
Aaliyah Boston.
Yeah, that's it. They were showing her. I was like, I've never heard of her before in my life. And now I'm going to know exactly who she is. And yeah, part of that you can say is a me problem. I watch a lot of sports. I got a complicated schedule. I also don't watch soccer. Like, it's not just a women's sports thing. I watch more PWHL because it's on my TV rather than watching WNBA games. But no, Caitlin Clark has had an incredible impact. And it is going to be a real fascinating thing to me to see how this translates to the WNBA. Whether, like, whether people still watch, mm-hmm. whether people watch her outside of college, she has kind of one of the best opportunities of someone that is going to drive people from women's college sports, where we understood the stakes and we understood all the characters, to women's professional sports, where we're not as familiar with that, yeah. especially most guys. Like, most guys cannot tell you five WNBA players. I'm sorry. They just can't. Like, we haven't seen a lot of it. I want to watch it now with Caitlin Clark. I'm far more invested with Caitlin Clark being in it than I ever have been before. And I really do feel like that is something. Like, that is something that is incredibly powerful. And I can't wait. I can't wait to see the rest of her career. I felt sad when she lost. I wanted her so badly to have that championship. Felt good for South Carolina because, again, I didn't know much about their team. And I'm like, damn, having an undefeated season is pretty special. Yeah. And their team was awesome. But, yeah, I think that she is going to go down as one of the most impactful women's athletes who has ever lived. And again, in a span of a year, I think that she's got a pretty compelling case. Anyway, we got to take a quick break. We got to come back, and it's Ricky Romero on Home Opener Day. Mike playing in Ricky Romero with Kendrick. I don't know if he knows he's from, like, he's a California guy. I just got to quickly say that I just saw a clip that the guy sent me that J. Cole basically apologized for doing a diss track. And this is the most cringeworthy 48 hours. I got so excited when I saw that J. Cole dropped the diss track and I went, nice. And then it sucked. And I love J. Cole, but it wasn't good. It wasn't good. Especially since it's like in the middle and he keeps like complimenting him in a diss track. And I was like, no. And you're the guy who called it the big three in the first place. Like, anyway, the backtracking is hard to watch. Anyway, that aside, Ricky Romero, former Blue Jays All-Star guy who's pitched home opener, opening day. What's up, brother? How are we doing?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Okay, so let me start with this. Is it better or worse starting on the road or home in terms of, like, the pressure that comes with a season? Like, which one did you enjoy more? Like, coming home to pitch or starting on the road and pitching?
No, man, at home for sure. It was always at home. And I only did two, right? In 2011, we did the home opener, right off of spring training. And then the next year we started in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And I feel like for the guys this year, I mean, it's tough, right? I mean, when you go from spring training, where you pretty much you're on the road, I mean, you're at home, but it's still the road for a lot of the guys and you're still not really settled anywhere. You know, you're going to be in spring training for 4 or 5 weeks and then you're off and then you start on the road for 9 straight games. It doesn't make it easy. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure, you know, obviously for me, knowing that we were coming home and that you get to get settled, you get your place, I didn't have a family at the time, but I know the guys that had families there, they can get their family settled and they find their apartment and everyone's moving in and you kind of just feel like, all right, this is home for the next X amount of months. And there was something always about that. And obviously, you know, opening day itself speaks for itself, especially in the city of Toronto. I mean, mm-hmm. I've always said this. I tell my guys here in LA, a lot of friends that I have, I'm like, you know, you guys talk about Dodger Stadium opening day and this and that, but honestly, you guys have to experience one in Toronto. There's just something special about it. It's just different. And they always look at me like I'm crazy because obviously it's Dodgerland here, but I'm like, man, it's just different out there. And being having the opportunity to be a part of one and seeing the energy and feeling the energy. I mean, hopefully that's what the guys feel tonight. And I know it's been a little bit of a rough start to the season, but mm-hmm. I'm telling you, JD, it's a completely different ball game when you step in front of your fans and you finally get some cheering towards you instead of, you know, against you.
Dude, 100%. 100% this part. Home opener is one of my favorite days of the year. I always make sure that I go to it because you're right, it is special here. Like, there is an atmosphere here. And I don't know if it's like summer's around the corner, right? And it's basically the first, maybe it's like it's not just home opener for the Jays. It's like home opener for patio drinking. It's like, hey, exactly. Everyone, we're all about to drink outside again. And everybody in Toronto's like, nice. We're doing this. Open the roof. Like, how many people have the open the roof take when it's like 6 degrees in Toronto? Like, who cares? Open it up. Like, let it fly. Yeah. First patio night. But no, there's always an awesome, awesome, awesome energy in the Rogers Center for the first game. The only thing that I'm kind of curious about this year, and the reason why I asked about, like, starting on the road and then coming home, is I kind of, like, there is an added layer of pressure for these guys right now. Like, they're coming back, and I've been talking about this, but you got to look up at the Jumbotron, and it's only 9 games, whatever, but a bunch of your bats especially have to be looking up at the Jumbotron and seeing their statistics, and it's like OPSs of, you know, for Kirk, it's like 3-something, 392. For Varsho, it's like 404. Even Vladdy, it's like 689. I don't, like, I asked Brandon Belt this the other day. He's like, oh, you absolutely look up at that Jumbotron. So I know it's a thing. It's probably not as impactful as, you know, like once you settle into the actual plate appearance. But yeah, I'm going to be really curious to see how the players respond if they start slow tonight offensively and how the crowd reacts if that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting. And like I mentioned earlier, obviously it hasn't been the start that they wanted to.
No.
To get off to, especially, you know, from the hitting side. But as tough as it looked, I'm sure as it is, I never had to look at my numbers hitting other than, mm-hmm. you know, when interleague was going on and you'd see 0-0-0 and still couldn't get a hit. but for these guys, obviously they know, right? I mean, they know what's in front of them. They know they have, you know, 500 plus at bats left, and I don't want to get into the whole, like, oh yeah, like, you know, it's early in the season, because again, every game does matter. I mean, mm-hmm. we look at the end of the year and then you're like, man, if only they would have won that one game in April. So they all do matter. I mean, it is early, and also coming off a, you know, cold New York City, I'm sure mm-hmm. that, you know, that's going to be, you know, now you get to play inside the dome. It's warm, and you get to kind of get a feel off of the crowd. I mean, that's the biggest thing. I think when you're running out and you feel the energy of the crowd, when the anthems, you know, when they sing the O Canada anthem, mm-hmm. then there's just something about it. And I think, you know, you'd be crazy to think that doesn't pump you up. So hopefully they come out with a different type of energy tonight. And it's not going to be an easy task. Obviously, mm-hmm. you have Seattle Mariners and Luis Castillo, and we all know what he's done to the Chase.
Yes, we do.
You know, so hopefully they're just able to come off with that, with a different type of energy and get hyped up. And like I said, I think those guys are pros, and they've been in the league for a while now, that they realize, like, okay, we've gotten off to a slow start, but it can easily be turned around with a really, really good series. And next thing you know, you're back to 280, 290 in just a blink of an eye.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned pitching in the cold. Now I kind of want to go backwards to the weekend for a second, because you do have that experience. What is it that makes it so difficult? Because, like, Gausman, I think the velocity on his fastball dropped by almost like 4 miles per hour. And my initial reaction was, oh no, because he was coming off of an injury. Did they rush him back? And yeah, there's been a rash of pitching injuries lately. I'm sure you've, you know, seen it. It's basically the discourse around all of baseball right now. But yeah, are you kind of dismissive of the Gausman start? Like, it's easier to throw that one out because the cold. What is it that makes it so much harder to pitch?
I always thought in one of the opening days that I had was in Cleveland in 2012, mm-hmm. and I remember how cold it was. It was sunny, but it was still really, really cold. And what makes it so hard is to grip the ball. I mean, the balls become so slick, and it's almost like, at the time they weren't checking for stuff in your hand. So, yep. you know, for me, my go-to was, you know, rosin and sunscreen, and you feel like you get a grip, but as soon as you get out there, it felt like your hand got slick again. And you just felt like you lost all grip. I remember, my rookie year, we went to Cleveland too, and it was freezing cold. And I'll never forget Roy Halladay. He ended up pitching really well, but I remember after the start, he came up to me and he was like, man, like, that was like the toughest start ever, just because I couldn't get a grip on anything. And his velocity was down too. And I remember it was like 90, 91. And you're like kind of looking at the board and you're like, is this right? Like, what's going on? And then we got back to Toronto and it was like, he was back to like 93, 94, 95 when he wanted to. And there's just something about it. That is just the fact that you have to keep blowing your hand. You get no grip on the ball. Everything becomes so slick when the wind's blowing in your face. It just feels, It feels different. I mean, sometimes you feel like you can't even feel your arm, and I'm sure that's a little bit about what Gausman was talking about, where it just doesn't feel right. You can never really get warm or break a sweat. That's the biggest thing, when you can't break a sweat and you can't, you know, just get in rhythm. And hopefully, you know, like I said, hopefully it's nothing to worry about with Gausman. And I'm looking forward to watching his start when he does get a start at the Rogers Center and kind of see how he goes from there.
One other thing from the weekend. Did you see yesterday's game?
I watched a little bit, yeah. Okay.
You know who was behind home plate?
He's terrible, man. Yeah. I don't know how they're still giving him... Like, you really do. You hold big league baseball players to a high standard. Their organizations hold big league players to a very, very high standard, to where if you don't perform, you're getting shipped out. And the fact that we keep running into these same problems, and you kind of keep seeing the same guys make these crazy mistakes and have an impact on games, you're just kind of sit there and you're just like, what are we doing? I mean, I get, the umpires have a strong union, this and that, but where is the accountability? That's what I want to know, right? Yeah. I mean, we have to answer questions to the media. Like, those guys should be answering, like, what did you see on that pitch that Tim Mesa threw right down the middle? Yeah. How did you miss that?
Yeah. middle ball. Like,
And as much as I don't like the Yankees, I mean, even that Gleyber Torres at bat where he punched him out, like, it was just so weird and bizarre and it always, it's him. I'll throw C.B. Buckner in there, who I think is one of the worst ever. And the fact that these guys just still keep getting ran out there and you're just, I mean, the world is seeing it now even more. And it's like they're under a microscope, because now every time he is behind home plate, it's like, oh, crap, here we go again. Like, any team that has him, you're just like, oh, man, like, what kind of impact is this guy going to have on the game? Not what kind of impact is Vladimir Guerrero going to have in the game? Not what kind of impact is Aaron Judge? It's what kind of impact Angel Hernandez, and it shouldn't be like that.
Dude, it's the craziest thing. So yesterday actually got me thinking, like, how bad would he have to be before Major League Baseball was like, okay, we need to stop this? Because he's so bad, right? Like, he's so bad at it, and everybody knows it, and there's groans across all of baseball, and people are tweeting about it. It's like, everybody knows enough is enough, and yet it's just like, nope, they'll still trot him out there. Like, if he started doing it like 50-50, because one of my favorite things about Angel Hernandez, and I mean this in a funny way because I cannot stand him, is, like, almost every, like, two-strike count, somebody throws a ball, it's like even close to borderline, and he's just, you can tell he's itching to do the punch out. Like, he's itching. And he's like, he kind of like twitches. He's like psyching out the rest of, like, fans are watching, like, oh, is that it? What is this one? What's this call? He's obviously completely disconnected from reality, because, like, he's like, we have ways of actually looking at this stuff and analyzing this stuff, and we know he's the worst guy at it year over year. And then they're like, he's like, why didn't I get playoff games? He's like, was it because you're bad? He's like, no, it's because everyone's racist against me. And I was like, oh, that doesn't seem to actually compute in this situation, Angel. I don't think that's the reason why you're being held back. It's because everyone thinks you're terrible. And he's like, no, I'm going to continue to just persevere through this and push through this. But yeah, it's remarkable to me. Like, it's remarkable that this is the position he's in. He's been doing this since the 2000s. So, like, you've had him behind the plate. Do you have an Angel Hernandez story?
I don't. You know what, JD? I'll be honest with you. He was always pretty good when I was
behind the plate. Wow, like, you were tight with him. You love him. You guys are bros.
There was no, like, connection there or anything like that. But the one thing I always... When I saw him behind the plate, I was like, "All right, I'm gonna be about as respectful as I can be, so I don't get on that side." And I don't know if JP having that Cuban on Cuban connection and stuff like that, like butter him up and stuff like that. I don't know, but I never really had like bad instances with him. Honestly, I didn't really have bad things with umpires in general. I mean, like I said, I always make sure I tip my hat and, hey, let's go. Like, or if I had any questions, call them by their first name. There's all these little things that you kind of learn when you're in the big leagues that, as a pitcher, that you're like, okay, call him by his first name, go up to him, don't be disrespectful. So I always tried taking the high road, even when they miss a call or something like that. You're just kind of like, hey, man, like, where'd you have that pitch? And he goes, oh, Rick, I had it about 3 inches off. All right, cool. Like, you just kind of walk away and not make a big deal out of it. So, but you know what? I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, this is big leagues, you know, and you see, and you expect, there's going to be little, misses here and there, but when they're like pretty obvious, you're just like, man. And I don't know if you check out the umpire scorecards. Those are always interesting. And I always look back and see, and sometimes you're like, wow, he was 98%. Why can't he be that consistent every time? And it's just one of those things where, you would think that at one point Major League Baseball would make a change. Or, I mean, there's got to be someone in AAA, right? Like, you always say that about big league guys who are struggling, and you're like, there's got to be someone in AAA that's got to come up and take this job and do a better job. So you just have to sit here and wonder, like, is it because the seniority and all that, and they just don't like making changes? He's a veteran. You're not going to do that to him. So there's all these instances that you kind of sit there and think about.
Yeah, no, it's insane. Like, it really is insane watching it. It's like, it's even, but all leagues are like this, right? Is, you know, you watch the NBA, and it's like Scott Foster clearly has a beef with Chris Paul. And, like, Scott Foster was best friends every day phone call with Tim Donaghy during their tenures. And it's like, yeah, don't worry, he's fine. He didn't do anything. He's here. He'll be all right. It's like, yeah, no, definitely he's 100% fine. Talk to Donaghy on the phone every day. But no, it's just, it's no big deal whatsoever. Just forget about it. Forget about it. Forget about it. Forget about it. He's totally a good referee. Like, it's all sports. It's not just baseball. But yeah, you don't want to be the number one guy. You don't want to be at the top of the pile. And he is 100% at the top of the pile for baseball. And I do think it's funny. Like, good for you that you're a mature enough guy and you played the gamesmanship and, you know, you knew how to act. You know, you had the bedside manner with umpires. But I also think that's so crazy that you have to be that way in order to ensure them doing their job better. Like, that an umpire's like, you better show me respect, Ricky, because otherwise, you know, strike zone's going to shrink. You're like, cool, that's not how it's supposed to be. Like, that's my least favorite thing is the officials that think they're the game, that they're bigger than the game, that they're a part of it in some way. Like, people should know their names. It's like, I don't want to know any ref's name ever. I don't want to know any umpire's name. That would be the ideal world. That would be my utopia. And I think that there's the guys like Foster and, man, who's the ref that Jeff Teague called out in the NBA the other day on his podcast? That was crazy, the story that he told. Armin's probably got it. But it's like, you hear stuff like that, and you're like, I can't believe that's real. I can't believe that Tony Brothers, Tony Brothers' story. If you haven't seen that, definitely go check that out, Ricky. It's crazy. He's talking about, like, the way that the ref's speaking to him before the game. It was nuts. It's crazy.
Yeah, anyway. I mean, there was a guy who, I mean, obviously, we all know his name, Joe West. You know, he had to insert himself as the center of attraction in every single game.
And signed autographs.
Kind of and you just sit there and wonder, and you're just like, man, like, stop making it about yourself. Like, he was another – but when he was behind the plate, he was solid at his job. He just – demanded, so like he was like, I am the authority here type thing. And you know, but on the flip side, you had guys like Tim McClellan, who were, to me, was one of the best. You know, he was just great, solid, respectful, and so I mean, you run into both sides of type of guys, especially on the baseball field. But there's definitely guys that like to make it about themselves and demand this certain respect. I just did it out of respect. Just, you know, they'd call me Ricky. I'd call them by their first name. Hey, you know, how you doing, Rick? You know, whatever, whatever. And then you just kind of build a conversation from there. But, you know, you knew there was going to be mess ups every once in a while and stuff like that. But you know what? You just, again, take that. For me, it was like, just take the high road. Because when in crunch time, when you're on a 3-2 count and you miss by 2 inches, they'd probably give you that call. And I agree with you. I think strikes should be strikes. Balls should be balls. It shouldn't come down to, like, he respected me in the first inning, so I'm going to give him that call.
Yeah, of course.
But you know what? That's the way that some of these umpires operate, honestly.
Yeah, I know. Which is nuts. And also, listen, credit to you and your family and everybody that, you know, had a part in raising you, because you obviously are just like a well-spoken good guy. Like, I've been around you a few times and you clearly are that. But I also am jealous of guys like you where it's easy to like you, you know, like you're a likable guy, whereas I'm not an easy, like I'm a grow on you type of guy. I'm not like an immediately meets you and people are like, wow, you know who I really loved was that dude. It's like, you like me once you know me for like 3 years. You got to put up with 3 years of hating my guts. And then one day you might wake up and be like, he's not so bad. That's what I'm hoping to get to. So lucky you that you are at least in those positions to be like, hey, you know what? Ricky Rowe is likable. I'm going to give him a good strike zone tonight. You know who else is likable? The guy that's pitching tonight, Jose Berríos. He gets the home and away, which is a cool way for him to start the season. The away opener and the home opener. Have you seen anything different from him this season, the way he's pitching? Because he's been lights out to start the season.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think the biggest thing that you see is, for him, it's always attacking the strike zone. And man, when his breaking ball is moving, it's like it starts in the strike zone and it just disappears into the away, into the other side's batter's box when it comes to right-handed hitters. It's like they're on it, and then boom, it just disappears. And I mean, Jose is a veteran now, right? I mean, he's experienced. Yeah, and we all remember, you know, a few years ago when all the hype was around him and he came out that opening day and he struggled. And I think he learned a lot from that year. And then, you know, you move on to this past year and everything that happened in the playoff game and how emotional he was about that. And I think he just comes in with the chip on his shoulder. Like, I want to be the guy. I want to be that guy that you know, that everyone is expecting me to be. And I think he's come out the first couple outings and shown that. And, you know, he's from everything I've always heard is that he's a big-time leader in the clubhouse. He's a guy that works hard, and he's a guy that's a master of his craft. And right now it's showing. And hopefully he comes out this tonight and continues to ride that good wave that he's on. And it's always good. I mean, I'll be honest with you, JD. When you're on a good wave and you're mm-hmm. riding it and you got a great feel for all your pitches, I think that's the biggest thing. And I think you see a confident Jose Berrios. You see a guy that's going out there and he's saying, you know what, here you go, here's my best stuff, and hit it. And I think when you have that type of mentality, I mean, you find success easily.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch him pitch tonight. Like, he's on a heater. Like, he looks awesome. And yeah, out of all the things that I'm most looking forward to for this game, it's that I really do feel as though he's going to be able to limit Seattle's offense. And yeah, give the Blue Jays' struggling offense a chance to be in this game. Okay, so I got to ask you about Alek Manoah. Nobody's watching him, but he just had his first single-A rehab start. He threw 58 pitches, only 26 for strikes, 4 walks, 6 earned run over 5 hits, over an inning and 2/3. The velocity was up, which is the thing that he is celebrating. My question is just this, is like, what is the level now that you'll start to be concerned? Because yeah, I think it's first single-A rehab start. You can't sound all the alarms. He didn't get a proper spring. They are going to build him up slow. But when are you going to say, oh, yeah, man, I don't know if he's going to find it again?
Oh, man. You know, I think seeing that line, and I'm sure everyone in Toronto saw it.
Yeah.
It obviously brings back for me bad memories because I've been there and I went through it. And you want to look at the positives, but at the same time, sometimes it's tough, man. I mean, I'm sure – he's like, you know, yeah, the velocity was there. It's great. But at the end of the day, I mean, this game is all about results, right? I mean, you don't want to see walks. You don't want to see a guy that's wild. And I'm sure that's not what the organization wants to see. I mean, it'd be different if you're, like, in the zone and you're, you know, sometimes in single A, you get whacked around because you are in the zone. You're a big pitcher and everyone wants to hit off of you. It's not like the big leagues where guys are, you know, patient and they kind of feel you out. They're free swingers, but when you see, you know, 4 walks, 5 walks, whatever it is, and you see a lot of balls being thrown, you're just like, man, okay, like, how can we continue to fix this? And you mentioned, you know, he didn't have a normal spring. He's coming off a little shoulder injury. So you hope that they continue to build him up and he continues to feel good. And with the great news is obviously the velocity is there. It's now being in the strike zone more consistently, and hopefully, you know, the next whatever outings they have planned for him, he continues to find that because, you know, man, like, you know, 2 years ago, he was the guy, right? I mean, mm-hmm. It's like they were going to build the rotation around him. So you just hope that, that he finds it, man. I mean, I know, I'm sure it's been a long, with last season and then obviously coming into this season, it's probably felt like 10 years for him. But like I always told him, you know, look at the light at the end of the tunnel. It's something that I failed to see as a player just because I got so caught up in the moment and wanting results right away. Just continue to see that light at the end of the tunnel, continue to just work. And once it turns around, you're going to look back and say, man, like, I'm glad I went through those struggles. So you just, you know, you continue to root for him and hopefully he figures something out. And the good thing is that now he's in Florida. He's, you know, he gets to build up at his pace and then the organization can go from there. But obviously there has to be some level of concern, right? I mean, when you're Ross, when you're Mark, I mean, there's gotta be some level of concern. You're just wondering like, okay, like what's the next step? What do we need to do with him? But again, I mean, hopefully, you know, if they have 3-4 starts planned for him, he continues to build up and continues to show that, hey, you know what? I still have it.
Yeah, dude, it's like the offense, right? If people were bringing up the fact that the Jays are, whatever, 25th in OPS to start the year, 23rd in OPS to start the season, and we're, you know, 9 games in, I'd be like, shut up, who cares? We'll talk about this in a couple months. But it's the fact that you have last season, right, that you're leaning back on, and you're going, no, it's a larger sample. You can't discount it as much as you normally could have because of the way last year ended. And I feel the same way with Manoah's. He started spring, his first spring start. What was the problem? locating pitches. He was walking guys. He was hitting batters. And he's always hit batters, but it's not, you know, that was when it was the slider was getting mixed in as a like a wipeout pitch, and he was dominating. So now you look at stuff like this, and you want to throw it away, and I want to be like, yeah, whatever, you know, give him another start. But as this continues to accrue, it becomes more and more difficult. And, yeah, you know, you said the whole light at the end of the tunnel thing, but this is my biggest point of curiosity for him psychologically is he's someone who's always dominated. He's never had major stepbacks like this in his career. But I have to imagine that when you work all, you know, you work all through the winter, he's in the gym as much as he's in the gym. He's thinking about trying to get back to his old self. Like, how defeating it is when you first step out onto a mound and things aren't working for you.
Very. I mean, like I said, I've been in that same situation. I mean, in 2011, I came off my best year, and I went into that season, you know, thinking like I had to work twice as hard to be that good. And I was like, I want to be that good. I want to be 2011 good. So I got to work twice as hard. When in reality, sometimes it's like you have to take a step back.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I failed to do. It's like take a step back, enjoy the success, enjoy what you just accomplished, and just kind of continue to go forward working on whatever it is that you need to work on without the pressure of like, I have to be better. I have to be better than I was. And I think when you fall into that trap, that's when, you know, you start falling in. When you do fail, you're like, man, like you start looking to your left, to your right, and you don't know where to look. And you kind of start feeling like you're super lost. And seeing him and what happened last season, you kind of saw that. You kind of saw a guy that was just lost. That just was like, I'm working so hard. Why is this game not rewarding me? And that's just the game of baseball sometimes. And that's just life, you know, right? I mean, I think when you have a really good chance, I mean, for me, till the day I retired, it's when I kind of sat back and I was like, man, what I accomplished was really so cool. You know, like I got to the big leagues as an East LA kid. I did so much in such so little time. Did I want 10 years in the big leagues? Heck yeah, I did. But the fact that I was able to get to the big leagues, you know, even if it was, you know, 4+ years, it was like I still did it. And for me at the time, I got so caught up in like wanting to be the best and wanting to put out for my city and wanting to do this for my team, and that I forgot about, like, you know what, enjoy the success, enjoy, you know, what we accomplished. But at the same time, you got to continue the same drive and not try to overdo it. And I think sometimes in this game, you try and overdo things, you try and overthink things, and that's where you kind of sometimes can go a little wrong.
Dude, it was even at the beginning of this interview, you were like, I only pitched 2 opening days. So I was like, yeah, that's a lot. You're like, oh, only 2. I was like, yeah, as opposed to most people who are like, I got like 4 or 5. I was like, how many opening days you got? Like, I don't know. I can't really count them all. Okay, last thing I want to ask you about, though, is, you know, speaking of overworking, right? Because this is the topic in baseball right now. There's a quote going around from Dr. James Andrews. I'm going to read it to you, and then, you know, I want to just get a quick thought, which is, okay, I started following, this is him, quote, I started following the injury patterns and injury rates in the year 2000. Back in those days, I did about 8 or 9 Tommy Johns per year in high school, age younger. The large majority of Tommy Johns were in the major league level. Now, he's saying, these kids are throwing 90 miles per hour in their junior year of high school. The ligament itself can't withstand that kind of force. We've learned in our research lab that baseball is a development sport. The Tommy John ligament matures at around age 26, which is crazy to read. He didn't say that. That was me. They said, in high school, the red line where the forces beyond the tensile properties of the ligament is about 80 miles per hour, end quote. So in basketball, like, I know you're a big hoops guy. There's a lot of discussion. There's like a bit of a reckoning now with the way USA Basketball specifically develops players. There's a lot of discourse around AAU specifically and whether or not it's actually teaching kids how to play the game the right way, and why the United States is being surpassed by a lot of countries in terms of the top end talent. And yeah, just what it's sort of doing for kids, the wear and tear of kids. And do you think baseball is now having this reckoning moment? Because a lot of guys are talking about the chase for velocity, and you read something like that from literally the world's foremost expert, and it's very hard to ignore. The problem is how do you put the genie back in the bottle? Because kids and parents and teams and strength coaches are always going to be chasing that velo now. Like, I don't know where we go from here.
Yeah, no. I'm glad you brought this topic up, because I was just talking to a couple friends about it, and they were asking me the same thing. And it's true. It's become the thing is that we have created this thing where we've become obsessed with velocity. And so the only way to get to college is, you know, who throws hard and how do you get it, how do you become a prospect? You got to throw hard. But now we're seeing that those guys that throw hard, they last, you know, 2, 3, 4 max years, and then boom, they go in for surgery, and you're just kind of seeing this epidemic. But I think it starts at the youth level. I mean, you mentioned AAU basketball and the flaws that exist there. It's becoming baseball too, man. I mean, I get asked by, you know, I coach both my boys now in baseball, and the amount of times I get asked to give pitching lessons to 8 and 9 year olds, I'm like, for what? Like, you know, like they have the attention span of, you know, of an 8 year old, you know, they really don't process things the way a 14 year old kid would or anything like that. I mean, with travel ball and it become, especially here in Southern California, it's a year round sport, and we're going to do this and we're winning rings here at the age of 8, 9 years old for what? They asked me about my son. They're like, hey, can we borrow him for travel ball? No, thank you. Like, I'm good. Like, he's good just playing the little league that we have right down the street from our house. And then he moves on to soccer, and then he moves on to basketball. And it's just the way I run practices, the kids always like, they're always like huffing and puffing, because they're like, again, we're doing this again. I'm like, fundamentals. Like, if we don't know how to field the ground ball, we don't know how to play the game of baseball. If we don't know how to play catch, we don't know how to play the game of baseball. So they kind of buy into that. And I think we've created this epidemic where it's like, if you're not in travel ball, you're not good enough. If you're not, you know, if you're not throwing 100, you're not good enough. And it's like, when I was coming up, I mean, I don't feel that old, JD, but when I was coming up, it was like, you know, 86, 87, you were solid there, and you just kind of build up as you went along. I mean, coming out of high school, I was maybe tops 88. And by the time I left college, I was tops maybe 94. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like that's considered not no bueno, you know, and I think we've created this thing where if you don't throw hard, you're not going to get a scholarship. If you don't throw hard, you're not going to get drafted. So I think this is a big baseball problem that we have. And obviously with proper mechanics too, I mean, I could get into all of it, but it would take forever. But there's just the way that the mechanics, you see some certain guys mechanically and you're like, whoa, like you can see the flaws that exist there. So, so yeah, I mean, it's a combination of everything and, of a lot of things going on in the game of baseball, and hopefully, you know, it's sad, right? I mean, when you look at, you know, Strider and Shane Bieber, and you're just like, it's like you're almost reading social media, and you're like, who's next? Mm-hmm. You know, who's going to be next, and what big star is going to be next, and it stinks, and hopefully we're able to find, you know, the answer to it. I don't know if we ever will, but. The more we become obsessed with velocity, the more we become obsessed with, you know, throw as hard as you can, and we don't really care about your mechanics. We'll squeeze the 2, 3 years out of you, and then it's next, because that's what it is. I mean, in the minors, you go down there, and I've talked to a few guys, and they're like, yeah, everyone throws 100. Everyone. Everyone throws 95 plus. Everyone. It's just, you know, it's next. We'll squeeze 2, 3 years out of you. But to me, I'm like, I'm looking at what happened to longevity? Like, what happened to the guys that could pitch for 8, 9, 10 years in the big leagues? And I feel like that's slowly decreasing.
Yeah, dude, honestly, I think that it's across all sports, especially, well, three of them in particular, which is basketball, baseball, and hockey. For me right now, the ones that I see directly, because like football, we just don't have in this country the same way, and still feels to me anyways, like football is... It's a sport where you have to play and practice hard, and you have to compete. Like, it's just a hard thing to, you know, develop skills, right? Like, you can be faster. Like, there's always going to be guys that if you run 4.4 speed, that's going to get you noticed. But also a lot of that is like, you know, there's no really bad ways or too many bad ways of overtraining when it comes to like sprint speed. Or at least we're not seeing a ton of injuries based off that. The other sports, it feels like baseball, like the velocity, basketball with like the 3-point shooting and the dribbling, and hockey, same thing, is that there's such an emphasis on skill, a certain skill. And then we're losing some of the other stuff that kids are being professionalized way too early. And I talk about this all the time where, you know, I like that a guy like you looks at it and goes, yeah, my boys are going to play other sports. You meet so many pro athletes and like, what's the best way? They're like, play a lot of sports, enjoy the sports, have fun with the sports, make it something that you covet and enjoy rather than what you see so much of now, which is like, oh, your kid's 8 and you're coming up to Ricky Romero and asking for like pitching training tips and trying to get him to like get his V-ups. Like, shut up. Just let your kid play a sport. He's eight. Like, this is crazy. And so I feel like a lot of the joy is being taken out of sports and this hyper focus on skill. We're losing a lot of what makes these games special. And we're actually putting kids in more harm than they've been in years past. And I just don't like the trend. The only hope that I have is that people seem to be opening up their eyes to this across all the major sports. And a lot of the experienced people are saying, hey, something's got to change here. And that's why I think it's really important for a lot of people like yourself and a lot of pro athletes to stay engaged in this and continue to use your platforms to say, yo, we've got to do this thing differently. Because otherwise you're going to hand it over to people who haven't done it. And who people who think that they have some formula, right? I'm not saying strength and conditioning coaches like that, but you know what I'm talking about, like the Instagram strength coaches, the Instagram people that claim that they have some solution to something or a skill that they have. And it's like, what did you actually do though? And it's like, nothing. You're just, this is about you, not the game. And so, good for you for doing it that way. But yeah, I'm scared and yet like weirdly hopeful.
Yeah, no, I really like the word you use right there, professionalism. I think we're trying to professionalize these kids at the age of 8 and 9. And I'm like, you guys realize they're not going to be big leaguers at 10, 11, 12, 13.
Dude, I told my dad when I was like 10 years old, I wanted to be a professional basketball player in a Pizza Hut. And he literally laughed so hard in my face. And I was like, I'll show you. And guess what? I didn't make the NBA. So he was smart. He's new. He's like, what are we talking about here? He's like, just enjoy playing the games. You're a kid. I was like, I'm going to be a guy.
That's pretty much what it is. And the reason I got into coaching, I always said I want to be that coach or that parent that kind of sits back in the outfield away from parents, you know, maybe with the adult beverage in my hand and just kind of enjoy. And then I went to one practice that I let my son play on a different team. And I was like, oh, hell no. I got to put on the uniform again. Let's go.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Only guys like you seem to be able to like really pick this up because you did it, right? You know, like I think that a lot of parents have a tough time, especially if they're new to sports. They're like, oh, I guess that's normal. And it's like, no, like that's not the way it's supposed to be.
No, it's teaching them, like I said, the fundamentals of the game, just the repetition. I'm like, you guys ever heard of spring training? They're like, yeah. I was like, you know what we do in spring training? The same thing every single day. Mm-hmm. Every single day. When you guys go to a big league ball game, what do you guys see the infielders doing during batting practice? Taking ground balls. Exactly. They take a million ground balls throughout the whole year. So that's what it is. That's how we're going to practice, and that's where we're going to learn. And sure enough, they start buying in, and they start seeing the results on the field in a game, and they start getting excited about it. And I'm like, you see, if we get out, we hit. If we don't get out, we don't hit. And then they kind of get a kick out of that. But it's a fun process. It's fun watching them grow up. I mean, again, they're seven, eight-year-olds is one of the teams I have. And then I have a little, you know, 5 and 6-year-old team, which, you know, that age is just like, just go out there and, and
it's
run
orange
the baseball
slices.
However the hell
it's
you
like,
want to run them.
It's, like, it's basically just a meeting of kids to eat oranges and drink sports drinks. Yeah, which is what it should be.
Exactly.
Yeah. Are you playing baseball? Like, no, we're eating oranges, and I guess there's baseball. I guess we'll do that later. Yeah.
And you just try to keep them engaged, right?
Yeah.
To like the game, and hopefully when they get to the next level, which is the next division, you're just like, okay, they liked it enough that they came back, and you still teach a little bit of fundamentals, but not you can't go too crazy. And everything about it has been fun. I mean, obviously, getting to do this, you know. A lot of people ask me, like, how does it feel like, you know, to go from like a big league stadium to come and coach a bunch of 7-year-old teams? And I was like, you know what? Or a 7-8-year-old baseball team. And I'm like, you know what? I always dreamed of this before I had kids. I was like, I always wanted to have my kid running around, you know, the Rogers Center the way I pictured it. But obviously, I was young and there's no chance in hell that I should have kids at that age that I was, you know, in Toronto. But now, you know, seeing it all and being able to experience, you know, even our walks just down to the little league field, it's special. And it's something that, you know, I hope my kids, one day they're like, I remember when dad used to, you know, walk with me to the field and we used to just talk about baseball or whatever it is. And I think my 8-year-old's getting to that point where he's kind of starting to realize like, okay, this is fun. This is I'm enjoying this, and I'm enjoying being with my friends. And at the end of the day, that's kind of what I want. Right. I mean, you want them to like it, and the rest can take care for itself. I really don't care if he's the best 8-year-old in the country or 9-year-old in the country. That to me doesn't mean anything. And I think that's where we're at right now, where parents get caught up in rankings. You see rankings of 10-year-old and 9-year-olds, and you're just like, what are we doing?
Dude, honestly, most of the time when I see the regular, like a lot of the parents were that are doing that kind of stuff, and I know people in my life that are like that, where they're like, and then the kids got this hockey, and it's like, you know, tens of thousands of dollars a year, and I'm like, this doesn't seem like it's for them. It seems like it's for you, but whatever. I'm just going to stay out of it. I always go, I don't want to, like, I don't have kids. I'm like, kids is a nightmare. Then I talk to guys like you, and I'm like, man, maybe I don't want to have kids. Like, that sounds cool, what you got going on. That sounds all right. Walks down to the beach and just having a beer and watching your kid and just checking out, like, on the, yeah, just having fun with it. Like, that sounds good. And having that perspective, that sounds nice. The other stuff, depressing, I'm like, I don't want any involvement with this. Like, I don't want to. Nothing to do with that. I'm good, thanks. I like sleeping in. It's nice. It's all right. Hey, Ricky, thanks so much for doing this, man. It's always a treat getting to chat with you. And yeah, enjoy the home opener tonight, pal.
You too, man. I mean, shoot, I'm looking forward to. I'll see it on TV, but yeah. I can't wait to see all those rhinos. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of buzz and talk about them. I'm already seeing it on Twitter, so
yeah,
or X as they call it. So
no, don't do that.
Looking forward to it.
You're old.
And, looking forward to hopefully the Jays getting back on track.
Absolutely, brother. Talk to you soon. See you, Ricky.
All right, sounds good, man.
Ricky Romero, former Blue Jays All-Star. A lot of good stuff there. I'm very excited, actually, legitimately, to see the renovations and just look at what is going to be a more complete park. Because dude, that the ballpark was not in a great spot. Like it was a big. It's becoming a problem. And I never wanted it to move. Like, it's in the perfect location.
Yeah.
And I think people would never really fully appreciate that until it was gone, until all of a sudden the Rogers Center was somewhere else. And you went, wait, oh, that was actually really nice being able to get down there. So now to have that location and have the new features and being able to, like, today I'm going and I've already been texting with a lot of friends going, okay, I'll meet you here and I'll meet you there, and having those social areas and then people actually want to be in the seats and excited to face home plates. Like, that's... Yeah, I'm genuinely more excited for that than the team tonight. Anyways, let's take a quick break. Let's come back, hit what we missed.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, Simon Douglas, what did we miss?
We got to start with the Clips talk, I think.
Yeah.
Clips happening today. You're watching. Do you have glasses? How do you feel about celestial events?
Okay. I got to be honest, I thought it was like already happened. I thought it was over the weekend and I just missed it. And then I was talking to Ennis and he's all about the moon. Ennis really fashions himself a
lunar expert.
A sky guy, let's say.
He's
a sky guy.
He likes sky guys, to be honest.
You like sky guys?
Yeah.
I don't care about the sky, really, unless I eat mushrooms and then I'm like, oh, I'm really
into
the sky.
The sky.
Now I'm a sky guy. I get it. I understand what all the hype's about. Outside of that, though, it's never really a sky guy. I have to say this because it's the truth. I don't have the glasses. Mm. I'm certainly not going to procure the glasses ahead of the time. Now
yeah,
I'm like, I am remotely interested in it. Like, I want to see it. So it's like it's going to happen once every 120 years. I also live in Toronto, though. And remember when there was Blood Moon or Super Moon or whatever? And it's hard to find the moon when you live in Toronto. A lot of buildings, a lot of lights. People went, oh, you're going to see the stars during the day. I went, not here, you won't. Not in this city, you won't. I'm interested. I don't know the level of effort in which I'm going to go to do this. Like, I'm going to try, I guess. And if I see it, I'm going to look at it without glasses. I've looked at the sun before, and I'm fine. So I'm not going to stare at it for 20 minutes. But, like, I can't take a peek.
Take a quick cheeky peek.
Yeah. Can't just, like, quickly look at the sun. Seems a little unfair that you can't look at the sun. That it's that. Imagine it's being that powerful. It's like, don't look at it. It'll burn your eyes.
Hey.
It's a billion, billion miles away. But if you look at it, your eyes are donezo.
Yeah, Joey Badass, right? Who had to cancel a bunch of concerts.
Was he staring at the sun?
Yeah, I stared at the sun for like the last eclipse, the one that Trump was also just looking at.
How long was he staring at it, though?
It seems like probably a while.
That scares me. I don't want to know that. I'm saying, like, I need a doctor to tweet in, or it says, at JD Bunkus. Can I look at it, no glasses, for under a minute? I'm serious. What is the like, I don't want to be Joey Badass at the Jays game tonight, stumbling into people. I can't have that. Like, I can't. I need to have my eyes. Maybe I'm out. Maybe what I'm getting at here is that I'm out. And that the best thing for me is just to not observe the sun, not to look at the sun. That is one of the funniest memes is Trump staring at it. Like Trump squinting his eyes and staring
up
at
it. Here's the thing. He's a funny guy.
That's so funny, though. Him just staring at it, no glasses. Because he's the president. Like, they could have got him the glasses immediately.
I don't even had a pair on the side.
That's what I'm saying. If I had the glasses, I would take them, okay? But I'm not going to go buy those nerd glasses. No. I'm not that. Like, come on. That's so intense to go buy the glasses. If you're one of those people, I got to say this. You can't, there's like apparently tons of Airbnb goers that are buying up everything in Niagara Falls. And
to eclipse watch at the falls?
Yeah, because apparently that's the best place to see it. That's going to be the zone is Niagara Falls. And that I also saw that cell phone networks are going to have a tough time handling it because we're bringing in like, there's like over a million people coming to Canada that are going to be stressing.
For the eclipse?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, no. People are fired up about the eclipse, brother. I was reading about it yesterday. Thing. I was completely oblivious to all eclipse stuff until yesterday. Yeah. And then I started reading about it because I wanted to know. I went, okay, it's 319 today-ish. Yeah. 318, 319-ish when we're going to get peak eclipse, total eclipse. cell phone networks are going to get stress tested. There's a million people. Airbnbs are going nutso. And there's people who are like coming on up to see it, and they're paying crazy rates to be in Niagara and watch the sun disappear for a couple minutes.
I'm going to tell you this, and this is bad because I'm kind of throwing myself and someone else under the bus. Multiple people on this show have eclipse glasses. I just want you to know.
That's pretty pathetic.
I just want you to
know. How did you get them?
My wife ordered them like a couple weeks ago on Amazon.
Okay.
I ordered them Friday on Amazon, and then I had to pay a little extra for delivery because it was going to come too late.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I had to do it.
Mike, you got glasses or no?
I do have a pair.
You have eclipse glasses. Everyone has eclipse glasses.
I've been
on
prepared.
The
boys are fired up for the eclipse,
you guys,
man.
Love eclipses.
Sky guys. You're on a show of sky guys.
I like clips.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
What happened to that boy?
Yeah, like that's what I like.
Sure.
I don't care about eclipse, really. It's whatever. I guess it'll happen. I don't really understand when people are like, it's never going to happen again. I'm like, okay, but I didn't care about it happening in the first place. Like, I was never like, I hope we get an eclipse someday.
Okay, but can we see it with the clouds? That's the question.
Well, that's another thing. You buy those glasses like a bunch of idiots without looking at the weather report like me.
Like you found out yesterday.
Yeah, but what did I do right away? I looked at the weather
cloud
report.
Cover.
Anyway, all you sky guys, sans mushrooms, I guess enjoy your big special day. Woo! You'll never see it again, so soak it in. I can't wait for it to be done, and you go, well, I'm not fulfilled. Wow, it was dark. Oh, I've never seen darkness before.
Look, the floor is low, but the ceiling is high. It could be great.
I don't know.
Let's go.
Seems... whatever. You guys love eclipses. Everybody go enjoy your eclipse. I'll be caring about sports tonight. That's what I care about. Actually, that'll be my only thing. Is this going to be night during the day? And I'm like, oh, it's nighttime. Yes, sports. And then it'll be kind of a trick.
So the eclipse is pulling one over on you.
Yeah. Anyways, I'll be looking, no glasses. See you there, I guess. Or maybe not. I won't see you ever again.